We're on page 155 in the Kuzari. We're continuing our discussion about Eretz Yisrael and its special qualities. I'd like to make reference to something that I discussed over Shabbos in my drush on Parshas Noach, because I think it's absolutely connected to what we're studying today. What we were talking about in the Kuzari, you know, we had this multi-week hiatus, and so I want to bring us back up to date. What Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is trying to communicate to us is that there's a certain quality in Eretz Yisrael that is very conducive to spiritual growth, more so than any other place in the entire world. So therefore, if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, just like if you plant something in a certain kind of soil, depending upon the nutrients that are contained in the soil, that will determine how the plant grows. Sometimes, you know, if you plant something in a very depleted kind of soil, it won't grow as well. If you plant something in a very rich, nutrient-laden soil, it'll grow much better. The same thing is true with the neshama. The same thing is true on a spiritual plane, that if you are in an environment which is very conducive to growth, which has very nutritious spiritual nutrients in the environment, you'll be able to grow tall and strong in a spiritual way. And if not, you won't have that spiritual strength. And that's why, of course, we always emphasize the need to place our children in healthy environments, in places where they'll grow tall and strong. But it's not just children, it's adults as well. We have to be very careful about the environment that we allow ourselves to be placed in. Okay, so that was the idea that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi had left off with. And it's really related to something that I discussed over Shabbos, because we talked about this very interesting idea in Hebrew language. That in Hebrew language, you have two words for the same idea for land. You have the word Eretz and you have Adama. And we mentioned that anytime the Torah has two words for the same word that we have in English, there's a very important distinction between the two. We also noted that Eretz is in the masculine conjugation and Adama is in the feminine conjugation. And we know that words that are masculine and feminine are not just by coincidence, but that they are the idea of their gender actually conveys something inherent about the item that's being described. Usually, just like we have in the world of science, male and female characteristics, not just in the human and animal kingdom, but they're everything in the universe is either male or female, in the sense that it is an effector or affected. So there are two words for land, because land has this duality of being an effector and is also affected. On the one hand, land has an influence upon things that grow from it, or things that live on top of it. And in that sense, we use the word Eretz, because if you want to be able to get sometimes to the essence of the meaning of a word that starts with the letter Aleph, you have to remove the letter Aleph in order to be able to understand what the word means. This is something that the Radak tells us in his Sefer Hashar Oshim, and is also brought down in other Sfarim as well. I quoted from the Sefer Haksava HaKabbalah by Rabbi Yitzchak Mecklenburg, and he makes this point as well. And he says that, take the word Eretz, Aleph, Resh, Tzadi. Truncate the Aleph, and you have the words Resh, Tzadi, which means roots, which means to run, right? A person ruts, is running. Or Rotzeit, sometimes you can double the Tzadi. And it means to be proactive upon something else, or even to crush something else, to grind something. So the word Eretz means that there's a proactiveness to the soil, and that it produces things. So that's what the word Eretz means. The soil is an effector. But there's also the word Adama, which also means soil or land. And again, take away the letter Aleph, and what you get is the word Dom, or Dumia, which means to be passive, silent, right? Amod dom, stat were to be still, right? Remember from Bnei Akiva?
Yes. I didn't say it that way. I said, yes, it's been a long time.
Okay.
I'm older than you.
So what?
You
think? Okay.
Whatever, yeah. But I remember we did that a lot.
Amod Dome, yes, in camp, right?
And also Bnei Akiva, yeah, both.
Right. So what does Amod Dome mean?
Stand still.
Stand still. So it's the exact opposite of roots, which means to run and be in motion. Amod Dome means to be still or to be silent, right? So you have this dual characteristic of soil in that it is passive, and that it just acts as a place for a repository for things to grow. And you also look at the soil as a producer of things that come from it. And it all depends upon the context of what we're talking about. Sometimes human beings have the ability to contaminate soil. So if you, let's say you you have soil that is right next to a toxic chemical plant. It wasn't Three Mile Island, it was another in the US years ago. There was a chemical plant that was seeping into the soil and people were getting cancer.
It was one
cancer.
In Walkerton, no?
Right.
It was in Walkerton also? Mm-hmm. I know, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. There was a toxic in New Brunswick.
In New Brunswick, okay. Yeah. So when we say that man has contaminated his environment and his soil, we would refer in Hebrew to the soil as being adama, that which is affected by man, because man has contaminated his environment. But we can also say...
by Adam.
Right, well, we'll talk about Adam in just a minute. Okay. When we say that the land affects man, we call the land Eretz. And that's why, most commonly, when we talk about the land of Israel, we don't call it Admat Yisrael. We call it Eretz Yisrael, because the land of Israel has truly a spiritual influence on those who grow up in that area. And that also, according to the Ksava HaKabbalah, this is a very important commentary on the Torah, he writes that that's the reason why you have two different brachas, that one uses the word Eretz, and one uses the word Adama. So, how do you say, when you make a bracha on a carrot, what word do you use? Borei peri ha'adama. When you're making a bracha on bread, what do you say? Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. So why do we use the word adama for carrots and the word eretz for bread? Why aren't we consistent? We should either say hamotzi lechem min ha'adama, just like we say borei peri ha'adama, or let's say borei peri ha'aretz, just like we say hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz.
Maybe because Adam was blessed or cursed to work hard to lotzi lechem min ha'aretz. Is that the pecha lotzi lechem min ha'aretz? Because that was Adam punished.
The pasuk says, "Bezayata pecha tocha lechem, ad shuvecha el ha'adama."
Okay.
Ki mimena lukachta.
Yeah, but
so it doesn't say in that pasuk eretz.
No, but he has to
bezayata pecha tocha lechem.
Yeah.
Right. So you're saying because man has to do a lot to cultivate it. Right. So therefore, very good. Okay. So that's what we had suggested on Shabbat. We had said that the difference between vegetables growing in the ground and wheat growing from the ground is that it takes a lot more cultivation to properly grow wheat. You need a lot more siyata dishmaya. You need a lot more cultivation of the soil. You need to work the soil. And the soil, therefore, is viewed as a participant in the growth of the wheat. Whereas with a lot of vegetables, like your radish or a carrot, you put the seeds, or tomato, you put the seeds in the ground and they grow. And there's not as much of a perceived reliance on the soil. Now, of course, we know that that's not completely accurate because, you know, you have to use fertilizer in the soil and proper nutrients in the soil, even when you're growing tomatoes and carrots. But the perception that man has is that there's a lot more work that goes into the production of bread. So we therefore view bread as a product of the soil more than we use vegetables as not so much a product of the soil, but rather growing in the soil. And therefore, borei peri ha'adama implies that God, blessed are you who allows tomatoes or carrots to grow in the soil, but not to be produced by the soil. Whereas by bread, it's hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Rav Mecklenburg actually takes it one step further, and he says that bread, by virtue of the fact is that it's something that is one of the products of Eretz Yisrael, as described by the Torah. The Torah, the bracha, therefore, the rabbis wanted to remind us of Eretz Yisrael when we make the bracha on bread. So therefore, they dafka said, you should say hamotzi lechem min haaretz, and the word aretz there is not just reminiscent of just stam land, but it's also supposed to be reminiscent of Eretz Yisrael. Since Eretz Yisrael is the most productive soil in that it actually influences human beings that live in Eretz Yisrael to the greatest degree of any other place in the world, that's why we use the word Eretz and not Adama when we talk about Hamotzi Lachem Min Haaretz. Okay? So, in this context, what are we talking about over here? Eretz Yisrael is truly an Eretz. It's not an Adama. And that's why it's important for a Jew to live in Eretz Yisrael. Because if you want to be able to be influenced properly by your environment, the environment that is most conducive for your spiritual growth is Eretz Yisrael. And that's where we left off with last time. We're now on the top of page 155. And the Kuzari says, I have not heard that the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael have any advantage over anyone else in the world. In other words, remember, like we left off last time, Rabbi Yehuda Levi is talking about a 12th century worldview where, you know, most of the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael during his lifetime are non-Jews. And if anything, he's actually seen a lot of carnage and violence in his lifetime in the Middle East. Because what is, you know, he's living right after what? Well, after the Crusades, right? He's living in a time when these were the most bloody periods in history in the Middle East, in all time, you know, because Christians were killing Muslims, and then Muslims were killing Christians, and like the Jews were just trying to get out of the way and wait until all of the carnage would subside. And, you know, if you're telling me that people in Eretz Yisrael are supposed to have been more spiritually developed, if anything, we see just the opposite. If anything, we see the most depraved behavior, the most violent behavior taking place over the Middle East, taking place over the land of Israel. So how do you explain, how do you defend your position when we see that that's not really the case? That's the question that the rabbi asks, the Khazar king asks the rabbi. So in paragraph number 12, the rabbi says, he says, this is like your mountain. Now, what do you mean? What does he mean by your mountain? He's talking about the Khazar people lived at a certain mountain range in the Caucasus, which is where the Khazaria region was. And apparently they prided themselves on being able to produce like really, really great wine. And he says, you say that it has exceptional vineyards. Nevertheless, if the grapevine were not planted on it, or if its soil were not cultivated properly, it wouldn't produce grapes. The land's distinguished qualities are manifest first and foremost in the nation, which is the elite in heart, as I have already discussed. They are like the vines in this analogy. The land is then aided by the deeds and laws of the Torah that relate to us, which are like the cultivation of the vineyard. Ultimately, this elite nation cannot achieve divinity anywhere else, just as the vineyard cannot successfully grow anywhere else except on the mountain. So, it's a beautiful metaphor. It's a metaphor that's often quoted from Sefer HaKuzari. It's one of the most famous quotes from the Kuzari. Is that Eretz Yisrael is of the most productive soil. But even the most fertile soil, if you don't till the soil, if you don't water the soil, if you don't regularly cultivate it, fertilize it, plow it, etc., it's not going to be able to produce anything. And of course, what's the most important ingredient to producing great produce? You need to plant the right seeds. If you plant inferior seeds in the most nutritious, nutritive soil, it's still not going to produce anything better than the seed that you put into the ground to begin with. And here's where we get back to the elite quality, the chosen status of the Jewish people. The Jewish people are like that superlative vine that you Khazars grow. It may take you generations in order to cultivate a vine that can produce. I'm not a vintner, but I know that they spend a lot of time, like crossbreeding and, you know, pruning, especially until finally they cultivate a certain kind of vine that they know produces a certain kind of grape. And then you've got to plant that vine in really, really good soil in order to get the best quality grape. It just so happens that anyone else, any other human being other than the Jewish people, are not good quality vines. Only the Jewish people inherently are good quality vines. When you plant us in Eretz Yisrael, then we have a good chance of growing big and tall and becoming producing great fruit. And plus one other ingredient, you need the cultivation. Cultivation is Torah and mitzvahs. And that can only happen when we have a temple, when we're observing Shemitah and proper Trumas and Maisrus, and we're doing all of the mitzvot hatzliot ba'aretz and all of the other mitzvos as well, and when we're doing the sacrificial mitzvos. All of these three ingredients put together, that is what creates the winning combination for this superlative quality that the Jewish people will have in Eretz Yisrael. So you need three ingredients. Three ingredients. Any one of the ingredients is missing, you don't get the magical formula. What are the three ingredients? Good soil. Number two, good seeds. Number three, cultivation. So good soil is Eretz Yisrael, no question. Good seeds, you need the Jewish people, which would explain why if Muslims and Christians live in the land of Israel, they're not going to behave any differently. They're just going to grow the same way that they would grow anywhere else. But the third ingredient is that even when Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael, their greatness will only become manifest if they are part of the program of Torah and mitzvot. If they don't buy into the performance of Torah and mitzvot, then the land of Eretz Yisrael will not have that superlative influence upon them. Now, what is that superlative quality that will become manifest within the Jewish people? And here too, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi tells us. He says, what are we talking about? Ultimately, this elite nation cannot achieve divinity anywhere else. Now, divinity is the word that we use in translating a very, very difficult phrase, Amar Allah, which is an Arabic term for some divine influence or divine thing. It's translated by Ibn Tibbon as Inyan HaEloki, the divine matter or the divine thing. And it's very, very, there's a lot of ambiguity in what Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi means in different places where he uses this term. But what becomes clear is that he's referring to the power of prophecy. The ability for the Jew to become superior in his ability to communicate with the Ribono Shel Olam and to have this kind of great contact that gives him prophetic knowledge, that can only be accomplished in Eretz Yisrael. And I'll prove this to you, as we'll see from the ensuing paragraphs. So, in essence, what Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is saying is that what is that superlative quality that is manifest in the Jewish people that you will not find in any other human being in the world? Prophecy. This Inyan HaEloki. And why will sometimes some Jews be able to display it and other Jews will not be able to display it? Because it takes work. And you also need certain conditions for which it can be satisfied. And you need to have them a Jew living in Eretz Yisrael. If you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, you cannot achieve prophecy. If you're not Jewish, you cannot achieve prophecy. And if you're not engaged in Torah mitzvot, you also cannot achieve prophecy. So it's a very, very concretized view of a spiritual phenomenon that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is very famously known for. He is very famous in the sense that he tells us that you need certain physical conditions to be satisfied in order for there to be spiritual phenomena manifest in the world. And as we've mentioned time and again in our discussions of the Kuzari, this is one of the areas where what Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi says is such a davar pashut, is such a simple and obvious point, is anathema to the Rambam, to Maimonides. Because for the Rambam, All three of these things are false. For the Rambam, the phenomenon of prophecy is not in any way linked to any kind of physical phenomena or behaviors or properties that may exist in this world. The Rambam, therefore, does not in any way link the ability to prophesy to being in a specific land. He does not in any way link one's Jewishness to the ability to be a prophet. And therefore, according to the Rambam, even if you're a Gentile, you can achieve prophecy. And he also does not in any way link one's performance of mitzvos to the ability to be a Navi. Which may be surprising to you, but you need to know it in order for to you to understand that this is the subject of great debate. The Rambam is much more intellectual in his approach to the phenomenon of prophecy, because he views prophecy as the perfection of one's intellect. And therefore, because the Jewish intellect is potentially no different from the Gentile intellect, there should be no difference as to whether you're Jew or non-Jew to be able to achieve prophecy, and it should have no bearing as to where you live in order to achieve prophecy. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi views this as not an intellectual phenomenon. Prophecy is not an extension of a perfected intellect, but rather it's an extension of some kind of metaphysical phenomenon where God defines the rules and man is not able to perceive how these rules work because they involve a totally different dimension of being. And therefore, just like there are certain types of soil on the physical plane, there are certain types of spiritual soil on the spiritual plane. And just because we may have achieved certain intellectual greatness means that there still may be limitations based upon spiritual limitations that are invisible to you and me. I believe that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has more successfully crept into the worldview or the mindset of Klal Yisrael in our world today. You may disagree. You may feel, well, the Rambam makes more sense to me, but I believe that in the backdrop of whatever preconceived notions we have about Torah and Yahadus, certainly Rabbi Yehuda Halevi resonates more as something that sounds more familiar to us. Would everyone agree or disagree with what I just said? Agree or disagree?
Agree.
That Rabbi Yehuda Halevi sounds more familiar to us? More particularistic and much non-universal? Yeah. Great question. What about, and I'll ask you even more, what about all the people who prophesied outside of Eretz Yisrael, like Yechezkel, who lived in Bavel for almost all his life, and still had prophecy?
Who is us?
And who is us? What do you mean, who is us?
Don't the Haredim base a lot of their reason for not living in Eretz Yisrael on the Rambam here?
I don't think so. I don't think that the Haredi mindset is the rational intellectual mindset of the Rambam. Not at all. I don't think that's the issue. The basis for not living in Eretz Yisrael has more to do with a theology that was articulated by Rav Yoel Tannenbaum, the Satmar Rebbe of blessed memory, who talks about the dangers of living in Eretz Yisrael because of its spiritual energy. It's dafka a huge conflation of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's theology, which kept the Satmar Rebbe away from Eretz Yisrael, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe for that matter as well. So it's a hypersensitivity to this kind of metaphysical kedusha that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is talking about, which may keep some Haredi elements away from Eretz Yisrael, plus a certain theology having to do with a messianic interpretation of how Mashiach is supposed to come and how he's not supposed to come. Yes?
In the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, most of the Jews were in Bavel, and the reason they didn't come back to Eretz Yisrael is not because of reasons of, you know, it's because of they were just comfortable there. The same reason why we don't come back to Eretz Yisrael.
That's right. That's right. Although there are those, yes, you're right. Now that's an honest confession that you're making as to why we're not in Eretz Yisrael. But I think that there's also, there may be those who may be able to justify the fact that there are benefits to not being in Eretz Yisrael. It's a minority opinion. I think the majority of us would, the majority of even poskim today, would hold that it is virtuous for every Jew to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the only machlokus would be, is there an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael? Or is it a mitzvah that you fulfill, but not which you get punished for not fulfilling? You understand? That's the only issue of debate for most people. Yeah.
Is this talking about Jews on a collective level, not on an individual level? Because I'm thinking of all the great people throughout the ages who didn't live in Israel. Let's say the Rambam. Are you saying, is he saying he would have been a greater person if he had had all the elements he's describing?
Yes, he's saying that every single Jew can only achieve their maximum potential by living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the reason why I say that with conviction, even though you could argue that it's subject to interpretation and it's a very valid question, is because when you look at the end of the book, the Kuzari, which we'll get to in about 30 years.
I didn't want to skip to the end.
Yeah. Right. When you get to the end of the book, you see that the protagonist of the Chaver, who's the rabbi in this story, in this dialogue, finally tells the Khazar king, I need to leave. I need to go to Eretz Yisrael because I cannot achieve my maximal potential unless I'm in Eretz Yisrael, and it's true for every single Jew. Rabbi Yehuda Levi wrote that autobiographically, by the way. There's a lot of autobiography that's masked in this story of the Kuzari. Because we know, what did he do at the end of his life? He immigrated to Eretz Yisrael as well, and shortly thereafter he passed away. Mm-hmm. But he felt that even when there's great risk to your life, you reach a certain point in your life where you say, listen, I've done everything that I'm going to do in Golos. The only way I can get to the next level is if I'm living in Eretz Yisrael. Do you ever feel that way, by the way?
Yes.
That, you know, we've been here long enough.
Yes.
You feel that way, Rachel?
Yes.
Okay.
Me too.
Speaking to the Sochnut?
Nefesh
benefesh. It's time. There comes a point in your life, for a Yehuda Levi says that for everyone, right? He says, you come to a point in your life, I've reached whatever I can reach in Galus. If I want to get to that next spiritual plateau, I feel that I can only accomplish it in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, I grant you that not everyone subscribes to that theology. Rav Soloveitchik, who was through and through a Maimonidean, did not subscribe to that. But he was the exception. He was the exception to the rule. Mark Shapiro just spoke about Rav Soloveitchik's sort of conflict with Zionism. You know, on the one hand, he was very much a Zionist in that he recognized that certain things that were happening in his lifetime were the Yad Hashem. So he appreciated the miracles that were happening to bring the Jews back to Zion. But at the same time, he did not feel that it was necessary for all Jews to pick themselves up to make Aliyah in order to achieve greatness for Klal Yisrael. But clearly, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi does not agree. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, for anyone, for the Rambam, for me, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he says, I have to pick myself up at some point and go. The question is, why did he wait so long? Until he was a very old man already. That's subject to much speculation. You know, there are times in life when you feel, look, I have a task that I need to accomplish where I am right now. I have a responsibility to my congregation, I have a responsibility to the people around me, to my family, whatever those responsibilities are. And therefore that prevents me from achieving my spiritual potential in Eretz Yisrael. But when the circumstances were right for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he packed up everything and went, as they say, he went with his grandson. And they went together and I think he left his wife, it sounds like, also. Like, I think his wife was too elderly, or perhaps she was deceased by that time. But we don't find that she traveled with him. And he just packed up and left.